Welcome to The Pipeline, all things CD and DevOps podcast by the CD Foundation. I am your host, Jacqueline Salinas, Director of Ecosystem and Community Development. It is season 2, episode 37. Today's episode is the last episode in season 2. We have a few announcements, so bear with me. So announcement number 1 was, you know, this is the last episode of season 2. We are going to be kicking off season 3 next January 2022. Following announcement is I am actually resigning from the CD Foundation. It is my last day this Friday, actually, when the episode airs. I've gotten the opportunity to go to a new organization where I also have the opportunity to lead their community building initiatives as well as their marketing. So I'm not going too far away from the community. I'm sure we will most likely run into each other at a KubeCon or two. And it's an exciting opportunity for me. It is bittersweet because I really, really have enjoyed my role at the Continuous Delivery Foundation, and I have really enjoyed creating content for this community. So I'm going to miss hosting The Pipeline. It's been one of my pet projects and one of the programs that I have been very, very fond of. The other announcement is The Pipeline was nominated for the DevOps Dozen in the podcast category. So thank you so much, because without the contributions and help of the community, we would not have received that nomination. I also want to ask if folks can please go out and vote. The CD Foundation, not only did it get nominated for The Pipeline, CDCon and the State of CD Report were also nominated in the DevOps Dozen. So please continue to support the Continuous Delivery Foundation, because we make this content for you. Those were some of the updates. I think the last update is also your new host will be our ecosystem advocate, Cara Delamarque. She will carry on the torch, and she will be hosting The Pipeline, kicking off season 3. So welcome, Cara, and thank you so much for carrying that torch forward. So today's guest is Brian Dawson. He is VP of Developer Relations and Ecosystem Development at the Linux Foundation. And our main topic is open source tools and the DevOps evolution. But before we dive into our main topic, we are going to kick off the podcast with my DevOps journey. Brian, welcome. Thank you so much for joining The Pipeline. It is also my last episode with the CD Foundation. So this is a very special episode for me. But as we always do, let's kick off with your DevOps journey. So can you share with us what your DevOps journey has been like?
Well, first, I want to say as we go in, it's sad to know that this is your last episode and your last episode with CDF. You guys have done a fantastic job. The podcast has been extremely valuable. But with all of that said, I'm honored to be your last guest. So thank you for having
me. Thank you. No, thank you so much for joining us. You are such a wealth of knowledge and such a pillar in our community. So yeah, let's kick it
DevOps
off.
DevOps journey.
What's your DevOps journey? Tell us about it.
I'm going to go into a bit of a career just to start with, right? I had no concept of DevOps when I started to get into software development. I guess like most of us, I want to say dabbled with programming in my early teens, and then ultimately around 17 or 18, just decided I wanted to teach myself how to code. Now that journey took me into a space where I founded the tools and technology team for Sony Computer Entertainment, the company that's now known as PlayStation, and that one of my charters there was to identify common tools and practices for our, at that time, I think 20 different development studios. And when I look back, that was the start of my DevOps journey. That was when I started to look at you know, how can tools enable people? How can tools enable more velocity, better process? How can process enable people? And then, you know, I eventually moved on from there. I had a chance to move on to a company called VA Software, later CollabNet, that built collaboration software. And actually, one of our colleagues, Brian Bellendorf, was the CTO. And that's where Subversion was created and founded. And that was the movement to before DVCS to CVS, to centralized version control. And that, again, was a step beyond RCS and SourceSafe, a step towards a focus on bringing people together to develop code socially. During that time, I had the opportunity to stand up an agile and CI/CD consulting practice, which meant I got to go into a number of companies and see what was going on and help them establish modern processes. And that's where I sort of picked up the third pillar on my DevOps journey. First, it was tools. Then it was process and practices. And then I realized what really matters is people and culture. Because what I learned as a consultant is I oftentimes I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I wasn't the smartest guy in the room. But what they needed was a third party impartial person to help coordinate viewpoints and get across organizational silos that were often culturally driven. And that lesson took me to the last role I was in, and that was a DevOps evangelist at CloudBees, where I got to go write about and talk about and present on my learnings. And then, as you know, I was able to join you at the Linux Foundation, where I took my past experience with DevOps and got a kind of focus on that oh so important overlap between DevOps and open source across all of those planes: people and culture, process and practice, and tools and technology.
Very cool. That's a very impressive DevOps journey, Brian. And thank you so much for sharing with us. And yeah, I think, you know, with my experience in open source and with working with this foundation, again, people and culture really, really make or break your business. And it's funny because in my experience, I have seen and felt that a lot of organizations just don't put a lot of emphasis in people and culture, and that's how you build community. And that's also one of the things that are so important into retaining talent, to just keeping them here. So thank you. It's very cool to hear your experience. Today we wanted to talk about, So where is my...
Well, you know, I'm going to be an unruly guest. I'm going to make this hard on you. But no, I don't want to move past that. I want to underscore that, especially in this context of the Continuous Delivery Foundation, where we oftentimes err towards what is the technical solution to a problem, and that is absolutely critical. But I know that the Continuous Delivery Foundation has the participation and eyes and ears of a number of leaders. And based on your statement that you said before, I just cannot underscore enough how seriously you need to take putting a focus on your people and culture if we ever want to truly see the promise of continuous delivery in DevOps. Your constraining factor is going to be your people and culture. So, you know, I know that wasn't exactly unruly, but I interrupted your flow.
No, you're good. Not a big deal. You can always interrupt me. You always have important things to say. But yeah, it's true. And, you know, it reminds me, earlier this week, I was part of a Twitter space that was how to lead with empathy. Mm-hmm. And again, going back to people and culture, it's just like, if we have more empathetic leaders, it starts with our leaders. It really is. If you want a certain culture to succeed, if you want people to be kind to each other, because we know that when people aren't stressed out, when they're happy, they're higher performers.
Yes. Yep.
So it starts with us as leaders. If we're not also creating that safe space, that psychological safety for our, you know, not only our colleagues, not only our managers, but our employees, then they're not, why would you stick around?
Leaders set the tone.
Leaders set the tone. And I think it's, you know, it's a big responsibility. And I think a lot of us sometimes forget about that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay.
We're going to talk about open source tools and the DevOps evolution today. From your perspective, how did DevOps evolve?
This is interesting because DevOps is a, I would almost argue, rare convergence of what I call quasi-business needs and grassroots movements. Now, obviously, we attribute DevOps, the term, to Patrick DeBall and Chris Beitart and their co-founders in DevOps Days, right? And hopefully we get a chance to talk about the relationship between that and open source eventually. But as many of, for example, thought workers or like Chad Waddington, the people that have, you know, worked with Jez Humble and David Farley will say, well, you know, the components of DevOps were being developed and kind of formed way earlier between XP, Agile, continuous delivery, the component practices, which again, beg to a level of culture. I will always say that DevOps is about, and Chris Beitart, when I had a chance to interview him, said the same, DevOps is about culture, right? And it's a set of practices or tenets that we ascribe to and aspire to, which are focused around the stakeholders in software development and delivery being aligned around shared objectives. And that could have organizational impact, tooling, or process impact. But a lot of the process and kind of tooling and technology, which then also led to culture, was being established before DevOps was founded. But for DevOps to really get power behind it, organizations that deliver software had to recognize there was a need and buy into it. And then ultimately vendors had to recognize there was a market and buy into it. So I say a key aspect in the evolution of DevOps and a convergence of grassroots and kind of business needs was the fact that software development teams and software development team leaders were saying there has to be a better way to do this.
Yeah.
Right. And that has arrived in what I'd still call a movement, though we, you know, kind of debate, is it still needed in a term? Is it not needed? But however you label it, I think, you know, prior to DevOps Days, then DevOps Days, then further adoption, people like you growing the community has resulted in a movement that makes this practice, the domain we're in, better for everybody involved. The practitioners and the people that work within it can do it with more impact, influence, less tedium. Business leaders should be able to properly implement and drive more clear outcomes and transparencies. And a key thing is users of software benefit from. So just so you know, this is going to be a 2-hour podcast. Okay.
This is actually a masterclass. very cool. No, thank you so much for your perspective and the history on that, because, you know, the cool part about creating this content is, you know, hopefully anybody can come in and listen to it and just pick up and start learning from it. So I'm always very excited when folks are able to just give that much detail. So let's transition over to a little bit about open source and DevOps. So my question is, why do you believe open source and DevOps go hand in hand, if you do or if you don't? And the follow-up question is, do you believe that open source leads to DevOps success?
I just think they're both terrible and they've completely changed it up. It's funny because I did get to see that question. I'm like, oh, I have the answer. I just did two presentations on this. But now I have to think about it a bit. First I'll say that really open source is at the roots of DevOps. if you today go to the DevOps Days website and you read the about, I think Patrick Dubois wrote it. I believe he cites Cathedral and Bazaar by Eric S. Raymond. And if I'm misremembering that, he absolutely cites open source as the inspiration, as one of the inspirations for DevOps. And look, they're across all those tiers of people, culture, process, practices, and tools and technology, there are extreme similarities. I'd say one of the things that prompted kind of the founding of open source is innovation was being locked and blocked. Right. So as kind of the commercial software movement opened up, and a lot of what primarily had existed in Fed and academia kind of became the realm of commercial competition, that patents and everything stifled innovation. So open source, you know, to some certain extents, right? There's a lot of roots. I won't, you know, necessarily get into the specifics, but was really about unlocking that innovation, the creators being able to come together and collaborate to solve problems without the constraints of direct revenue or intellectual property motives, right? Now, what happened with DevOps? Right. With DevOps, what we were seeing is slow waterfall processes that resulted in people going back and forth through ticket systems between teams, spending days trying to identify and fix bugs that had been introduced two quarters earlier, working hard every day, but not seeing the impact of their software go out. In many ways, that was stifling or blocking innovation. Right.
Very slow. Right.
Yeah.
We wanted to go fast.
We wanted to go faster because we wanted to innovate, learn, get that feedback and roll it back in. Right. And agile started to, you know, the agile movement started to, you know, tear those silos down. The continuous delivery and continuous integration movements helped with that. But then we hit the other blocker. Right. We were dealing with silo, which ultimately were cultural divides that slowed down the process and prohibited us from getting innovation out the door. So they both came about to unlock innovation. Right? There's a focus in both movements of all stakeholders having valuable input, not to phrase it in the way either kind of domain exactly phrases it, but at the core, it's common in saying everybody's input has value. Bring all stakeholders to the table, right? That then leads to a focus on open collaboration. Again, great ideas, great input. Bug fixes, security fixes can come from anywhere. So work transparently, provide systems, tools, and processes that everybody can access and adopt, and then deliver and learn. Right. They're very, very similar. And I have a presentation that I did where I did a you know, direct compare and contrast between some of the tenets called out in Cathedral and Bazaar and what we know as kind of common principles of CD and DevOps. And they are almost one to one.
I mean, it's super powerful what you do, what can happen when you enable a community with what you said, process, tools. And yeah. Then a transparency somewhere they feel safe to share and to just help out. I think that's, for me, honestly, that's what made me fall in love with open source is actually more the community aspect, putting in process and then being like, does this work? Does this work for everybody? And then getting that feedback right away and then just continuously improving and evolving. Yeah. It's been, you know, it's going to be hard not being part of, open source foundation because it, you know, that's been like the bread and butter, but, you know, I'm not going far away. I'm also going to be with a company that really, really believes in open source. So I get to, again, build a community, but for a different company.
Jacqueline, I guess maybe it's been 2 years now since I first interviewed you on my podcast.
Yeah, when you were with CloudBees.
Yeah. If I know one thing, this is where your heart's at. So whether you're doing it in an official cheater chair, or you know you're doing it at some rocket ship startup, community's kind of in your blood. So I expect that you will.
We've talked about this. People are important, and you know, of course, human relationships are complicated as they can be, but people are important. And I think that's why I'm so attracted to like open source.
Well, to put it in context, we talk about APIs and API endpoints and look, you can have the greatest logic on the back end, right? But if your interface and the interface to your endpoint is not well-structured, performant, et cetera, won't be effective. And I bring up that term endpoint and APIs because what I've started to say for a while is, look, I don't care what you take. At the end of the day, software and really even technology has humans at either end of it. It's developed by humans for humans. Now, maybe, you know, the embedded system in your TV, you don't strike as directly being developed for you, right? Or the middleware that delivers a REST API for a modular website. But somewhere in the chain, a human is consuming that work. And we are still not at a point where AI is generating entire code bases. And I rue the day when we get there. Because like you say, human interactions and human relationships are hard. So, at the start of that endpoint, arriving around the right vision, getting people to collaborate correctly to deliver the right thing is tough. But then also understanding what people need on the other end to have a delightful experience to empower people, right? So humans develop software for humans. Now, I know I didn't answer your second question. Yeah. Why is open source important to DevOps? And it's interesting. It's because it unlocks innovation. I was talking to you earlier about how I had the pleasure to, I just said it on the podcast, right, of working on Subversion. I also went through this for a presentation, and you know it well, being with the CDF, that nearly every powerful or impactful DevOps innovation, tools and technologies in particular, has come from open source. So that Subversion, CVS, Jenkins, Concourse, Kubernetes, on and on.
Yeah, so many cool open source projects that, you know, people have. I'm always impressed with some of these open source maintainers and creators. They do a lot of great work. It's a big shout out to them because again, without their time and their contributions and their dedication, like we would not be here. We would not have other solutions that really make our lives so much easier.
I'm taking over being rude again, but you kind of said it. We would not be here. So why was Subversion important, for instance? So let's just talk about that, which really was kind of a precursor to GitHub. Because prior to that, you had, no offense to anybody listening from IBM, right? It was the IBM sales model, right? You had somebody high up that went through this big, possibly RFQ, RFP process, went golfing, had dinners, and then bought a solution and changed. It took a long time to procure it. And then it took even longer to shift from it to something else. What open source allowed people to do is solve the problems locally. But not only find something that could solve their problem and adopt it without going through that heavy corporate process, but you know what? If it didn't solve the problem, they can contribute to it. And so just like you said, look, this thing I called the DevOps movement earlier, just on that tooling layer would not have been here without open source.
Yeah. Yeah, we wouldn't be here without open source.
Am I fired yet? For
yeah, not yet. I need your brain a little bit more.
All right.
All right. So yeah, like with the other part to that question is, yeah, do you believe that open source leads to DevOps success then?
Yeah, I think it needs to. I think it is such a rapidly moving and evolving space, and we are constantly learning. While some of this stuff to a lot of us just feels like constant practice, I mean, like common knowledge. I think the stat I had last heard, and I had done some surveys on my own, still about 65% of technology-based or you know, technology-important organizations haven't adopted mature DevOps practices, right? So we still have a long way to go in terms of that. And even as that's happening, we have continued innovation that shifts the landscape. So the same benefit that we drew from open source innovations in the DevOps maturation prior to now is going to continue to be necessary. Commercial tooling, commercial technology is not going to be able to keep up with the pace of the ever-evolving DevOps landscape. And so open source is going to continue to be critical. And again, our colleagues, look, Jacqueline, you're at the core of it. You see it every day, right? We are partnered with CNCF. Mm-hmm. We can see not only the breadth of the Kubernetes ecosystem, but
plus complementing tools and exactly. Other open source projects that have actually evolved from Kubernetes, for example. It's phenomenal, actually, the way that the ecosystem has organically grown. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah, I like that. Beautiful. Quite beautiful. That is, I would expect you to say that, and that resonates.
I think this is a good transition over to, do you have some predictions for 2022? I mean, we're coming to the end of the year, you know, maybe, yeah, I shared with you, I like to read my horoscope.
Yes.
I'm going to be getting my, you know, my horoscope predictions soon. So like, what would be some predictions then in where the DevOps movement is heading? What do you think is going to happen in 2022?
I need to look up my horoscope first. What sign are you, by the
way? I'm a Pisces. What about you?
I'm a Sagittarius.
Okay.
I turn 800 years next week. 800 years old now. The birthday comes up next week. You know, it's interesting.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you. I think a lot of the predictions I have for 2022, as I think about it, were the same ones I had for 2021. And I think, you know, some of our, you know, we had COVID, we had the pandemic, quarantine, a bunch of, you know, supply chain issues that I think meant not that. Say again?
Vaccines, too.
Yes. That I would say, so my predictions for 2021 weren't wrong. That's the main takeaway here. They were just delayed. And that is that in the DevOps space in particular, one of the things that we're going to see is we're going to really start to see more and real practical applications of machine learning and artificial intelligence. We're going to move beyond a lot of these buzzwordy terms or people tagging something as artificial intelligence and ML to drive valuation. And we're going to start to see, and I think in particular, more leveraging of existing and shared technologies like LFA, like that LFAI provides, LF data. Yeah. Some of the work being done by the major cloud providers to really start to optimize the app dev pipeline in CD. There's a lot of talk about ML ops, but there's still a lot of opportunity that is missing in terms of how we can create continual feedback loops, offload some manual burden of developers in the app dev pipeline. I think someone we both know, Kosuke Kawaguchi, who founded Launchable, is doing some of that with applying artificial intelligence to reduce the scope of testing, to identify that when you change an area of code, to then derive what tests actually need to be run to ensure that you reach a quality application.
Right? That's really cool.
One of the things is, you know, data storage has gotten cheap. We need to be able to store it, transport it, and then analyze it easily. But think about, you know, if you're an organization that is deploying to prod hundreds of times a day, thousands of times a week, you are generating a wealth of data that can start to tell you, as I go spin up a job, or I define my CD process, or I do a commit, I can continually be getting feedback into my IDE based on artificial intelligence that can help guide what I do. Based on what we've derived, this is going to increase your build runtime by X amount. Based on what we've derived, this has a, you know, X a percentage of probability that it may introduce instability into production, right? These are very broad things, but that's going to be powerful because I don't know if I said this earlier. I kind of look at tools as kind of exoskeletons for the humans that develop software, right? They enable us to do more, to be better, faster, stronger. That's the $6 billion man, of course, right? But artificial intelligence and ML are going to be like adding sort of jet fuel to the machinery, you know, that gives us as human software developers superpower. Another thing that is going to happen is I think we'll finally settle on, look, the term DevSecOps and DevOps may start to melt away. It won't happen fully in 2022. But the core principles, tenets, and practices and needs for it will be there. And as part of that, we're going to truly start to see those tenets be adopted beyond the bounds of dev and ops, right? Continue to better include quality and security and better connect to the overall business. I think value stream management and what's going on in that space is helping bring it over. I think we'll get beyond the summer of reckoning and take the next level in truly driving the diversity and inclusion that I believe is so important to what we want to achieve with DevOps, right? Bringing people together to collaboratively solve problems and to do it at speed has a definite dependence on DEI. And I think both open source and DevOps are going to continue to focus even more meaningfully on it in 2022.
Very cool. Well, I would have said I'll talk to you next year to see how correct you were on your predictions, but it's my last episode. So
I think that means by default, my predictions are correct. We'll just say, since we can't check
yes, they're right. They are so right.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just 2022, let's see what it brings. I think whatever happens, we will always just persevere and be resilient. I think that's also what I've learned from participating in open source and being part of the CD Foundation is, you know, you end up building a community that really helps you move forward. So I think that's also been one of the really heartwarming things about working here. And one of the things that I really loved about it is just people coming together, building cool stuff. And again, like you said, hopefully using their superpowers to launch it quickly and help us be more efficient in our lives. Brian, I want to thank you. It's been a pleasure also being a colleague at the Linux Foundation with you. I am very excited to see where our paths cross next. But yeah, thank you so much for being my last guest for the pipeline.
All right. Well, if you have you probably known me long enough that I have a problem with trying to get in the last word. And I want to take that to say just thank you. You know, what you have built in terms of infrastructure and effective collaborative community with the Continuous Delivery Foundation has been phenomenal, and it will continue to be impactful. But then also what you've modeled on this podcast and in other spaces where you're present in terms of what it means to be an inspiring, encouraging, and impactful human in this space with your honesty and transparency has been really important. So I thank you for having me as your last guest. I thank you for being you and what you've thank done. You. And the rest of the community isn't here, but I'm comfortable extending thanks from this community that you built and supported.
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. And yep, this is my final sign off.